This sound was recorded on September 4, 1962, Sid and Rose Creed, Union as a Friend.
Why, my child, should you say that your mind is clean?
I can't sometimes can't remember names, anything like that. I don't know why, I suppose it's so late coming up.
I also have great difficulty in remembering names. That, of course, is perhaps more understandable, since I have to pierce through the ages of time to recollect names of instruments and of peoples long since having departed the earthly existence. I think that this might be a time to speak of instruments, not only the instrument that I now use, but instruments who have been used by the group in other times. For we must remember that many souls who have been part of our group's source have been used as instruments on earth in varying ways to bring enlightenment and to bring truth in their age and time. This instrument is but one of several who have volunteered of their own will to return at different times to earth, to be the earthly instrument of the group in this world of spirit of ours. They have served in their time and age their purpose. It was given them to unfold their plan. It was their part to play. I have told you that you yourself have never been an active instrument from the point of being a medium, that you have been an instrument in bringing enlightenment and bringing unfoldment to various souls at different times. Once, long ago, you were a priestess in ancient Egypt. On another occasion, you were a sister in a convent. And in that convent, you brought together many souls. And you brought to them an insight and a realization of the will and the purpose of the divine for those souls gathered under your wing. This time of which I speak, when your name was Lynn Agnes, you were a sister who became eventually a mother superior, and it must strike you, particularly in this age and time, an odd thing the one who, so like yourself, finds difficulty in being long in the presence of women, especially en masse, to discover that for many years you were the confidant and indeed the mother of so many women. But you were most patient, most tolerant, most understanding, and you did not exert from them the hard life and penance that many in a similar position would have expected. And you had the vision and you had the power to see into the individual lives of each one and to be one of great calming influence that you created in this order, a great serenity and a great peace and a great understanding of the true purpose of life. You may say to me now that you of all people, being a mother superior in a convent, shut away from the world with women, is the least likely of all experiences, the least likely of all incarnations that you could have had, anything less suitable as you see yourself now. This would seem so remote and so unlike a life for you. But it was a life of dedication and of service, and a life which was necessary and essential for you, because in that incarnation you learned one thing that was most vital and important for yourself, while giving out love and service and understanding and wisdom to others, you learned one thing that was most important and most essential: patience. In this life you consider yourself the most impatient person, that is, where certain things concern you, and yet in many other ways you are the most patient of women. When you were Agnes, you're a woman who had turned her back on the world. You had resigned yourself to a life of dedicated service. In a sense, as you would see it now, a religious life. And possibly, even now, perhaps in a sense, a pointless one. But for that time, that age, and for you, as you were then, it was an important, necessary step in your evolution. You were able to do great good, and you worked among the poor, as indeed did all your group, and indeed in an age and time where poverty was such, and great sickness prevailed, where a whole community of peoples was stricken with a plague, you and your helpers ventured out to nurse and to succor the sick and the dying. And in this age of which I speak, you lived to be a very old lady indeed, and were much revered by the peoples where you worked for so long, not only in the convent, because yours was an order which went freely out among the peoples. It was not a closed order in the narrow sense. And you were able indeed, through intercessions with the Pope and with others in high influence and office, to change many of the old laws and orders and bring about a greater realization among those in whose care you were concerned. 1300, as far as I can tell you, the years 1320 to 1360, for you were roughly 40 years in this order. You were a soul who truly had dedicated yourself, and you came in a family of great high renown and position, and you renounced life which would have provided you with great power eventually and great position for this lowly state, much against your father's wishes, much against your parents' desires. But since it was that you were set upon it, and you refused to marry a man chosen by your parents, it was decided that you should have your wish. You were betrothed to a man called Lorenzo, and you yourself renounced your name and became Agnes. But your name at that time was Beatrice. Second time you bore that name in your earthly incarnations. You lived not far from Padua in Italy. As I think I may have mentioned, you have had several incarnations in that country. The man Lorenzo was a fine man, but you were not drawn to him, as indeed you were not drawn to any man, for from the earliest age you were drawn to the church, you were drawn to the inner self. You were a strange child, one that caused indeed great concern to your parents, and it was decided that you should marry at quite an early age, 16. And then that was a common thing in that time and age, and much arrangements were already well underway when you stole from the house in the night and took refuge in a convent nearby and pleaded to be taken into the order. There was great consternation because the nuns felt that they would risk the displeasure of the noble family who ruled that particular province, and they were in great alarm, and in consequence notified your family of your whereabouts. But after a lot of difficulties, when they realized, your parents and your father in particular, that you would not be happy and would not make a wife in the true sense. And also, when physicians were brought to you and it was decided by them that for various reasons marriage was not a wise thing, it was decided to allow you to enter into the holy order. In that age, you were a strange creature, full of compassion, full of patience and tolerance and love. But physically, you were a woman, and yet not completely a woman. And this was possibly one of the reasons and causes why your parents and your father in particular, after consultation with the doctors, decided to allow you to have your wish. From an early age, you had been a remote child, taking far more interest and pleasure in the things more common to boys than to men. You were not attracted to them in a physical sense, and marriage to you was something that could not possibly appeal to you. You were more interested in women in this age. I do not mean in a physical sense, but you felt more drawn to service among women. And as strange as it may seem, you were a very tall, and particularly tall, young woman for that day and age. You were nearly 6 feet in height, and you had a figure very commanding and a noble countenance, and it was a great desire of yours to excel in all these sports, and at times you would ride horse like a man, which was cause of great consternation among the peoples of the time, because you insisted upon riding as a man rather than a woman. Indeed, there were many factors, many physical factors, material factors, which caused great concern, and your mother endeavored to interest you in the things which in those days a girl of high station would naturally be interested in. But you could not set your mind to these things. And you were a leader, and that is one reason possibly why you were so successful in the convent, and so able to rule righteously and justly, and hold the women together, and keep peace and order, and organize. You had a great power of organization, and indeed you formed a whole series of groups, and you sent out various sisters to open up new schools and to do a lot for the peasants, for the poor people. Your life was one of dedication, but though you do not realize it, and you were certainly not a medium in those times, you were very much inspired. And there were times when you were filled with ecstasy, when you were transported, when you were levitated. You had an insight into life uncommon for a woman of your day. And you were greatly respected because of your education, coming from such a noble family. From that day and age, you were able to write, you were able to read and decipher documents, and you kept records. And many things, and some of these records are still in existence. And though you may not have the opportunity to view these things or check these things, notice not the fact that that which I speak is so. This was an incarnation which was very necessary to you, very essential, in which I suppose in modern parlance you would say that you were a borderline case between male and female, containing the better elements of both. And certainly you served and did great good in that time. This man, Lorenzo, of whom I speak, was a man very powerful, and he had been given to you and you given to him in marriage when you were were young, very young, which was common in the day and age with great families to organize well in advance marriages and plan, and he was most relieved when the wedding was not possible for it to take place, because he himself was in love with another woman, a young woman with great attraction, a great charm, and since this marriage could not and did not take place, he was able to marry a woman of his choice, and you were relieved for him as much as yourself. This is an interesting story in which I tell you, but one which I must in time fill in more detail. But you yourself, at that time and age, who was known far and wide for good deeds of the order to which you belonged, received at your death a great blessing, for you were able to leave the body and be transported in the realms of spirit, and you are able for many centuries of time to stay here, and it was of your own choosing to return, though the need was not so great.
She whom you call Gwendolyn.
Yeah.
had an incarnation, when you and she were cousins, and there was a rivalry between you, though you were related, and it is an incarnation which is possibly one of your lesser, possibly one of the reasons why the association or link between you at this moment in time is not so strong. And yet in this age in which I speak, there was this link and association, and there was a rivalry between you of a strange nature. For you are both concerned and interested in the same man. And yet neither of you were to share this man's life. For this man himself was given not to women, but to religion. And he himself had little time for the frivolities of life, and women in particular, but was given to delving into religion and endeavoring to find truth, trying to discard that which was unimportant, and trying to discover that which was important. He was the one who in himself feared none, and made many enemies, and because of his outspokenness, and because of his declaiming against the Church of Rome, eventually was burnt at the stake. This is an incarnation also in Italy. And this one of whom I speak is he whom we now use as an instrument. But it is an incarnation which for yourself and for she whom you call Gwendolyn is perhaps not so important. But the odd thing should be that when this man was in his youth, and before he became so immersed in religion, was a man who was light and flippant, and each one of you endeavored to marry him. Your desire was marriage. And between you, you created in his mind a revulsion. And he became immersed within himself, an introvert. Became one who sought religious teachings, and became strong in religious beliefs and views, and became a hermit and wandered from place to place, and eventually, by his outbursts, created such a condition that he led himself to an untimely end. It is an age and a period of history and time which I find difficult to detail, but it was one which was violent. And I think that it may be that in this present age, when you are cousins with this soul within, you find some difficulties in fully comprehending perhaps each other. That doesn't mean to say that neither she nor you have not progressed far, far, of course, from those times, those thoughts, and those old enmities and misunderstandings. I only mention it so that you will have some slight indication of this particular time. I do not feel that it is an important part of your incarnation any more than I think it is an important part of the medium. It is an interesting one in itself. And I think each one of you are going through certain phase which is essential in the pursuit of knowledge.
Oh, that's interesting.
Follow whether we like it or not, the power. We can alter to some degree and affect others in consequence. But we have free will, and yet at the same time, that free will can only be used according to the circumstances in which we find ourselves. And in this last incarnation of which I speak, in which there was this link again, you could only do that which you did. You were not free, but your love transcended the body. And in your mind, and in your spirit, and in your heart, you were one with you. And as I have said, and others may have told you in the past, these lives of which we speak, in which often seems that so much goes wrong, so much that one had hoped for does not come to fruition. Plans that are made are broken, and we are separated for a time and earthly things. All these things are necessary for our own advancement, for our own learning and experiencing. You must never feel that at any time, whether it is in this incarnation which you still dwell, or in any past incarnation, the things that may have happened and circumstances that may have been brought about were in themselves necessarily bad. Often when they seemed bad, they were good. For the true development of the spirit does not find its true happiness on the earth. There are those who seem for a time to find some happiness and are given the privilege to be together and to share. And it is good that it should so be, but it alters not the fact that the true happiness and the true sharing and the true spiritual unfoldment and joy comes purely when the minds and the spirits are blended as one, and the physical, material conditions have long since departed. For the true union of mind and of spirit is the union of completeness, oneness. And it is this union, it is this love that transcends all things, makes all things glorious, and brings about that joy and happiness and peace which all within themselves desire. There is no need for any soul to regret the tortuous path of the development of the spirit, and all the temptations that one may have had placed upon oneself in these very conditions of life. For always we are seeking and finding, and often we are discarding, and in consequence we are lightening ourselves to the extent that we have bereft ourselves of all material things which weigh us down. And all that remains is the purity of love and the accomplishment thereof, and the beauty and the joy of spirit that is inherited when all the labors of the earth are finished. There are things that are difficult to explain. There are times that have been lived when burdens have been carried, when we have often, so it seems, given ourselves in sacrifice materially. But what we must bear in mind, that when we have sacrificed most materially, we have gained most in spiritual realization and accomplishment. There is no need for you or any soul to be in any way dismayed about these truths of incarnations. For when we relate these experiences of past times, when we discuss details, sometimes perhaps of an intimate nature, when we are, as it were, laying bare the soul of individuals near and dear to us, we are but, as it were, showing truth and the unfoldment of truth, and how in the accomplishing of God's work, and in consequence our own salvation, we are beginning to realize how essential it is that we do many things which may seem strange at the time, or perhaps looking back upon them, seem unnecessary. But we learn by all the things that we do, whether it is when you give yourself, as in one incarnation, to what you would term today the church, and you devote your life in the church, dedicating it to the upliftment of many women, trying to show them the path as you saw it then, the spiritual progression, perhaps at times holding them fast to certain creeds which now you cannot accept. But we must remember that names and labels as such, in a sense, matter not. Even though one does bear some deed or some work under some title, it is not the title that matters or the name, but what is done from one's heart, from one's self. You have served in varying ways, and sometimes, of course, you have failed. For we do not always win the battles of the cities, and sometimes we learn most when we lose a battle. Because in suffering we gain experience. You have learned how to be a good loser, and having been a good loser, you have gained within yourself a greater realization for others. It's given you compassion, it's given you patience and tolerance. Though there are times when you feel a little intolerant, when you search your heart, it is but on the surface. It is not a deep intolerance. I am concerned that you should learn more and more and more, not only about yourself, not only about those around you, near and dear to you, those who have been linked with our group and still are, but also about others. Others that come into your life and perhaps stay a little while and depart, where perhaps for a few moments of time you are able, perhaps not always realizing it, give them an insight. Start them on the quest. Give to them an incentive. Change perhaps some of their views when they are narrow, when they themselves are often embittered, and sometimes all the earthly failings, in spite of their so-called spiritual realizations, they have not perhaps progressed as one wishes to have done. Sometimes you can help them and change them and make them see and feel more clearly that the weakness is within themselves, and that they must strengthen themselves by effort, that they themselves have within themselves the power to overcome. You do not consider yourself in this incarnation as having been able to achieve very much, and yet it isn't so. I can see your life, this present one, as one of great achievements. To you it has been a wasted life. It is not so. In many ways, you have achieved much. And in any case, as I sincerely believe it is your last incarnation, it is an incarnation whereby you fulfill certain things that we have set you to do, and you link more closely with the realm of spirit, because this earthly existence ceases more and more to interest you, for your works upon the earth soon shall be finished, and this incarnation was of your own choosing, that you might link up with certain members of our group, that they might carry on the work that has been said, of which you are a part. Sometimes the mysteries which still remain in part a mystery, these things gradually, I hope, and the help of others here, to clarify, not just for yourself, but for many. These sessions are important for all who listen, for all who will learn. And you are playing this part in making it possible. That is part of your work. The next time when you sit, you will go further into the details of some of the incarnations I've spoken about tonight. Now I must bid you adieu until tomorrow. My blessing and my peace be with you, and with all who listen to my voice. Peace be with you, child.
Don't worry about it.
I've got it gently. It's so shaky.